Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Chances are, before March 2020, many people listening hadn't ever donned a disposable face mask, maybe not even disposable gloves. But when the coronavirus arrived, we needed personal protective equipment. PPE didn't just show up, demand for it skyrocketed. Now, more than a year later, where on earth has all of it ended up? Our guests today have received alarming reports from around the globe that the mountains of masks and gloves that helped keep humans safe over the last 15 months have not been so safe for wildlife. They're with us to discuss their recently published research titled The Effects of COVID-19 Litter on Animal Life. Lisalota Rambonet is a biologist and PhD candidate at the Institute of Biology at Leiden University in Holland. Her work focuses on citizen science, animal welfare, plastic pollution, and human impact on the environment. Welcome, Lisalota.
Thank you.
Auke Florian Heemstra is a biologist at the Naturalis Biodiversity Center, also in Leiden. He's a PhD candidate in evolutionary ecology, whose work focuses on plastic pollution and the ways animals use plastics in building their nests. Welcome, Auke Florian.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
Lisalota, how did the PPE and wildlife problem first come to your attention?
So we organize every week cleanups in the canals of Leiden, Netherlands, with volunteers from canoes. And we saw an increase, a rapid increase in these face masks and gloves, single-use face masks and gloves, in the canals. It was actually in our top five quite quickly. And we saw this happening everywhere in the Netherlands. So they were found in large amounts and large numbers on the streets and in nature. So that was quite alarming.
Yeah, and actually during these cleanups, suddenly one of our volunteers comes to us and said, well, I found a fish, but it's entangled in a glove. And that was actually quite a weird moment where we realized that this material, which protects us, is actually harming the animals around us. And this fish, this was such a sad example of our impact. It was it had swam into the thumb of the glove, and actually the perch, the fish that it was, had spines on its back, so it couldn't get out anymore. And actually the base of the thumb was partially ruptured, so it really tried to get out, but it couldn't. And it was such a sad example that we tried to see if this is happening more often than just this one fish. And so we started to look for other examples.
That image that you took is so striking, because when the word entangled, sort of you think of maybe something gets wrapped around. I mean, this fish was trapped. We'll post that image on our website. Auke Florian, how pervasive is the problem?
Yeah, it's really an enormous problem. And actually billions and billions of people are actually using these face masks and gloves. And if just 1% of those by accident lose their face mask, it's already quite an environmental disaster. We see these face masks literally everywhere. And so sadly enough, our report of this problem is actually resonating with a lot of people worldwide, because this is a problem all around the world.
Lisalota, what types of wildlife are being affected?
Yeah, so besides fishes, we also saw interactions between animals living in the air, like birds, but also animals living in sea, in salt water, fresh water, and on land. It's actually everywhere. Every kind of animal is being affected by COVID litter, it seems, from our observations we found. You can think of entrapments like this fish in a glove, but also entanglements. So young birds being entangled in their nest already by face masks, but also ingestion. So we saw an observation of a penguin in Brazil on the beach. It was found there, and it actually had a face mask in its stomach as well.
Tell me more about how the PPE is affecting different kinds of wildlife.
Yeah, so we see different kinds of interactions between animals and this PPE litter. We see the entrapments, the entanglements, but also the ingestion, and that they are including it as nesting material.
Yeah, this one bird we have here in Leiden in the canals is the common coot. It's a black bird with a white dot on its head. And actually, it's a very interesting bird as it's using a litter from the canals as nesting material. And so as soon as the pandemic really kicked in, it started to include the face masks actually as nesting material, which is, well, so strange to see this nest really being a pandemic nest.
Well, okay, Florian, isn't regular litter a problem for wildlife too? Why is pandemic litter different?
Well, I think all litter is affecting wildlife for sure. Actually, this pandemic litter is, it's just suddenly, it's such a big problem, and it really adds to the already existing plastic problem. And especially the face mask and the gloves. Well, if you take the face mask, on every face mask, there are two of these elastic bands, these strings, which are really easy for animals to entangle in. So it's really an addition to an already quite a big problem.
That's Auke Florian Heemstra, a biologist at the Naturalis Biodiversity Center in Leiden, Holland. Also with us is biologist Lisa Lota-Rambonet from the Institute of Biology at Leiden University. We're talking about the research they published recently, the effects of COVID-19 litter on animal life. Lisa Lota, do you have a sense of how much disposable COVID-19 product has been used or produced since the onset of the pandemic?
Yeah, so it is actually estimated that we have like a monthly use of 129 billion face masks and 65 billion gloves globally. So that is an immense number. And yeah, what Auke also was saying, like if only 1% is ending up in the environment, it's such a big number already.
Auke Florian, how have you been gathering information for your research?
Well, actually in quite an interesting way, as many observations end up being shared on Twitter, for example, or have been shared on Facebook. And so many of these observations are actually not from real scientists, but from citizen scientists. So people who are bird watching, people who volunteer in animal rescue centers, for example. And all these observations are shared somewhere on the internet. And we collected all these observations to really make a report on how big of this problem it is.
So if our listeners observe something, they could add to your research by posting on Twitter?
Yes, they can share their observations through our website we established. It's covidlitter.com. And so anyone can share their observations if you see something happening in your backyard, for example, but also veterinarians seeing it happening in their clinics or rescue center employees. Anyone is welcome to share their observations.
Well, and actually, we will link to that from our website. Yeah, Auke Florian?
Well, actually, it's good to say that we only searched in the Dutch language and in the English language. So there must be much more out there, which we until now haven't found. So maybe something published in Chinese or something published in Brazil or something. So there must be many more examples out there. So this is just the tip of the iceberg, you can say.
Lisa Lota, what findings surprised you?
That it's also affecting domestic animals. So we saw a lot of observations from wild animals, but we actually found relatively a lot from cats and dogs ingesting face masks or gloves. And that surprised me, but yeah, I think dog owners and cat owners really should be careful when they have face masks in their neighborhood on the street, for example.
Auke Florian, what findings surprised you?
Well, I think our very first finding is still, for me personally, the most intense one, as we really found it ourselves just in our canals, in our own city. And it really started such a big problem, such a big project. And that poor fish is still entrapped in its glove, but now stored on ethanol in our little canal museum, and really trying to educate the public with this special fish.
Lisa Lota, I gather you're continuing this research?
Yes, definitely. We are trying to build up a database to really get an overview of the impact of these recognizable products. Like we said, plastic is a problem in general, but these products, these face masks and gloves, are so recognizable. So we can really get an idea of such new product in society, what its effect is on wildlife and domestic animals.
Alka-Florian, what are you recommending should be done to alleviate the problem?
Well, at the start of the pandemic, a face mask was really expensive. Actually, here in Europe, a face mask would cost you 10 euros. So you would be really careful not to lose it, actually. But after a few weeks, there were these big boxes being sold of just of having more than 100 face masks for just a few euros. And by that, by choosing such a throwaway product, the value really decreases and you're not really looking after it anymore because, you know, at home you have this big box of face masks. So I think with using a reusable face mask, you are way more careful because you do want to reuse it and you're not willing to throw it away. So we are really advising to switch to a reusable face mask as it's really helping nature to cope with this pandemic as well.
Lisa Lotto, what's your goal in reporting how COVID-19 PPE trash is affecting wildlife?
I think our goal is, of course, also awareness, that people are becoming aware that this is affecting wildlife, because it's a problem that is not really visible or recognizable for many people if you never heard of it's affecting animals. But of course, also the goal is really to have an idea of impact of plastic pollution on wildlife. We know a lot about its effect on sea animals in the oceans and seas, and on beaches, but we don't know a lot of all these other animals that are affected in cities, for example, where there are a lot of face masks.
And Alka-Florian, from your perspective, what is the goal of this research?
Well, I think from many people, we've heard that it's really been a wake-up call. And I think that's a really big compliment for our study, that hopefully people do change their behavior after reading our paper.
Well, I'm grateful to you both for talking to us about your research. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Lisa Lotto Rambonet is a biologist at the Institute of Biology at Leiden University in the Netherlands. Alka-Florian Heemstra is a biologist at the Naturalis Biodiversity Center, also in Leiden. We've been talking about their latest research titled The Effects of COVID-19 Litter on Animal Life. We have a link to it and to how you can report what you've observed at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break, and then we'll get an update from the Baltimore Harbor Waterkeeper and hear about ways to improve water quality here. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned on the record.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking trash today, specifically pandemic trash. We heard from two Dutch researchers who are finding that disposable masks and gloves are ending up in waterways and on land where it's endangering wildlife. Joining us now is Alice Volpitta. She is the Baltimore Harbor Waterkeeper at Blue Water Baltimore, a nonprofit whose mission is to restore the quality of Baltimore's rivers, streams, and harbor to foster a healthy environment, strong economy, and thriving communities. Welcome to the show, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, what does a Baltimore Harbor Waterkeeper do?
So the Waterkeeper Alliance is a global movement of what I like to call water watchdogs. So there are water keepers all over the world, and our role is really to hold regulators' feet to the fire, hold polluters accountable, speak for our local waterways, and amplify the voice of the residents that live within our watersheds. So Blue Water Baltimore has a Baltimore Harbor water keeper. That's me. But really, you can find them all over the world.
And so it sounds like it's legal work as well as getting your hands dirty.
Right. So water keepers come in all different shapes and sizes. I have a scientific background, but a lot of water keepers have legal backgrounds as well. So we do a lot of legal enforcement work. We work closely with organizations like Chesapeake Legal Alliance who can help us implement that piece of the work. Ultimately, water keepers are really just passionate about protecting and restoring their local waterways and engaging community members to feel the same way and to do what they can do to help improve our local waterways.
What kinds of effects did pandemic trash have on Baltimore's waterways?
You know, in Baltimore, we've had a trash problem for a long time. So this isn't necessarily a new problem for us, but it is particularly visible. And I'm glad that it's getting a little bit more media coverage at this point because, you know, it is connected to the pandemic in a lot of ways. I see masks and gloves all over the streets all the time. That's probably the biggest source of pandemic trash that I've seen. But, you know, before the pandemic, I saw, chip containers, I saw plastic bottles, I saw styrofoam containers. So in Baltimore City, as I'm sure you know, we've had a trash problem for a long time. This is just kind of the most visible form of pollution that's entering our local waterways. We have a lot of different types of pollution. Trash is really just the most visible one. And you can think of it kind of like a proxy for all different types of pollution.
Well, so it's not just the mess on the ground or in the water. It actually keeps things from functioning, right?
Right. So in Baltimore, we're supposed to have a stormwater system that leads directly from our streets, from our storm drains, down into a system of pipes, and it discharges directly into our local waterways through stormwater outfalls. And a lot of people see that those storm drains and they think to themselves, oh, there must be some sort of filtration device in there. There must be some intermediate step. Surely if I sweep my trash into the storm drain, it's not going directly into the local waterway, but it is. So in Baltimore, all of our trash that goes into the storm drain is going into the Jones Falls or the Gwynns Falls or the Herring Run, and ultimately ending up in the Baltimore Harbor, the Tapsco River, or the Back River. And all of this trash in and of itself is really harmful to the environment. It can break down into microplastics and it has all sorts of nasty consequences, or it may not even get all the way to our local waterway. It can get stuck in the pipes and it can create these big blockages that really cause a mess in our system. So in the case of the stormwater system, if we get those masks and the gloves mixed together with all other types of trash that are already in our system, it creates this flooding situation, and it can be really catastrophic for residents in the city.
Our earlier guests talked about their research findings that show wildlife is ingesting and getting entangled in pandemic PPE trash. Have you seen or heard evidence of that in Baltimore?
You know, I've seen in the past all different types of trash being integrated into wildlife habitat. So I see long strands of like VHS tape or cassette tape, that magnetic tape. I see it integrated into bird nests. And I've seen things like plastic gloves or the nitrile gloves integrated into beaver dams, actually. So I haven't actually seen those like really iconic photos that we've been seeing recently of like birds actually, you know, being ensnared in the masks, things like that. I haven't seen that out in the wild, but I don't doubt that for a moment.
It's Baltimore Harbor waterkeeper Alice Volpitta on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Baltimore's waterways and what Blue Water Baltimore does to protect them. What are Blue Water Baltimore's advocacy priorities this year?
So in Baltimore City, plastic bags are supposed to be banned now. They're supposed to be banned as of January 2021. But because of the pandemic, Mayor Scott issued an executive order delaying the implementation of that ban until July 9th. So one of the things that we will be doing over the course of the next month or so is tracking that, really making sure that Mayor Scott keeps his word on wanting to make Baltimore a greener city and actually does implement that ban, because plastic bags are so nefarious in our local waterways. They just get ripped apart. They never go away. We're also closely monitoring Baltimore City's modified consent decree for sewage overflows. So we keep an eye on Baltimore City to make sure that they are keeping track of their own implementation towards our goal of fishable, swimmable waterways. And we're also pushing for a stronger, expanded program for sewage backups in the city, which again, you know, that seems like a completely separate problem from trash and stormwater, but it's all part of our urban water cycle that's really connected and feeds into each other's problems.
Tell me more about some of the ways Blue Water Baltimore engages and educates the public.
We've found that one of the things that we can really do that's so powerful for Baltimore residents is just teaching them about the urban water cycle that I just talked a little bit about. And you know, I went to public school all the way through my education up until college, and I was never made aware, or I was never taught about the pipes under our feet. So I was never taught about the drinking water system, the stormwater system, the sanitary sewer system, how those pipes work together and what can go wrong with them that really leads to major pollution issues in the Baltimore Harbor and our local waterways. So taking the time to educate people in kind of like a alternative track of education outside of the standardized public school system, but seeing it as an ongoing educational opportunity for residents is so important, because once people understand the problems, they can really start to see how their own individual actions can lead to the solutions.
Well, is that the biggest misconception or misinformation you hear when working with volunteers or neighbors?
So I would say that one of the biggest misconceptions is just this idea that, you know, storm drains have some sort of treatment system, which they don't. They go directly into our local waterways. But also there's a major lack of understanding about how significant the ongoing sewage overflow problem is in Baltimore City.
So tell me one thing listeners could easily do to help improve Baltimore waterways.
The very first thing that I always tell people is, it's that classic, if you see something, say something. So our Pollution 101 training events teach people how to identify and effectively report pollution. But if you see something that just doesn't look right, if you see something flowing into your stream or even down into a storm drain that you know shouldn't be, you can report it. So if you go to bluewaterbaltimore.org, up at the top of that webpage, there's a link to report pollution. And you can send all of your pollution reports to us and we'll investigate them.
We will link to that from our webpage. So tell me a couple of the programs Blue Water Baltimore has coming up this month.
Sure. So we're still actively engaged in doing a lot of tree planting work. And that's one of the ways that we really get into communities and help them solve some of their own quality of life issues within their communities using this environmental lens. So trees have a lot of really great benefits. They reduce temperature in neighborhoods. They provide shade. There's some studies indicating they can reduce crime and traffic speeds. So we have some tree planting activities coming up this month. We also still have our Herring Run Nursery, which is our native plant nursery up in Mount Pleasant Golf Course that people can check out. So if you're interested in doing some later season native plant planting in your gardens, some summertime activities, check us out at Native Herring Run Nursery.
And you've got something called the Outfall Screening Project that I gather is not functioning right now. What is that?
Right. So as a result of COVID restrictions, we had to pull back on some of our volunteer programming last year, and we're ramping all of that back up. So we have this amazing program called the Outfall Screening Blitz. And we take volunteers into the stream. We all put on waders and we get into a stream and we try to find stormwater outfalls. And again, that's just the end of the stormwater pipe. So we find these big holes in the side of the stream bank, and we try to figure out if anything is discharging from them. And we only do these activities after 48 hours of dry time. And in theory, these pipes should only be conveying rainwater. So if we see anything else coming out of them after a dry stretch, we know that that's likely it's either groundwater intrusion, which isn't a really big deal. It is a symptom of a cracking in old infrastructure, but that's not really that big of a deal. Or it's an illicit discharge. So we often find evidence of water main breaks or illicit sewage discharges from the stormwater system when we do these outfall screening blitz walks. And we collect a sample of the discharge coming out of these pipes. We do a few simple chemical tests on it to try to figure out what it is. And then if we find evidence of an illicit discharge, we can report that to the Baltimore City Department of Public Works. If we're up in the county, the Department of Environmental Protection and Sustainability, and then they can go out, track the pollution to its source, and fix the problem. So it's a really amazing direct engagement opportunity for people to get in their local streams physically, but also to learn about the pathways of pollution. And we're measurably reducing pollution and improving water quality.
Alice, thanks for all this information.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Alice Volpitta is the Baltimore Harbor Waterkeeper at Blue Water Baltimore. We've been talking about the state of Baltimore's waterways and how to improve them. We've got links to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.